Oh, that's the great Fela Anikulapo Kuti, born Olufela Olusegun Oludotun Ransom Kuti, with Lady. It's one of his iconic songs about the politics of gender as it expressed itself in Nigeria. And around the continent, but of course he was Nigerian. Fela was just an extraordinary person, and a great artist, and always controversial, always controversial. He was sent abroad to study medicine, and he decided instead that he will study music at the Trinity College of Music. He became ill and refused treatment for AIDS. He died of Kaposi sarcoma on August 2nd, 1997. And more than a million people attended his funeral. But he gives us a starting point today, and it's about gender politics. And, of course, this being Women's History Month, I don't really generally tie myself into these themed months. But it's an interesting thing that occurred to me as I watched coverage over the weekend of Hillary Rodham Clinton and people just imploring, please, 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 could you do us the great favor of running for president? We just need a woman president. And the question became, in my mind, what kind of woman do you want for president? Is Hillary the kind of woman you want for a president? Is that the kind of woman that you think you could live with as a head of state? And I know quite a few women like Hillary Rodham Clinton. And then it brought me, of course, to this question, what is a woman? We say all the time, I'm a woman. Okay, well, what exactly does that mean in our society? And I don't mean just women asking the questions either. What do men understand women to be? What do women understand women to be? Where do we get these messages? What is the message? I mean, how do we arrive at that definition of ourselves? Not merely in the biological sense, but in the political sense, in the socio-political sense. Where do we belong as women, and what do we understand ourselves to be as women? What is troubling to me is that of the readings I've done on the subject from various women writers, I see a lot of confusion and a lot of philosophy that it just makes no sense to me. It seems as if, for the most part, there is an unresolved kind of warfare, essentially between white men and white women. And this internecine warfare really has more to do with notions of power than relevance in the sociopolitical sense. By that I mean, the argument is about who should share in the dominance and the control of others, and how much of the power would the men, who unquestionably have it, they have the power, to what degree would they, you know, give up some of that power? I look at the conduct of women in politics and generally in leadership roles, but it is more pronounced in politics because it is so visible, I guess. And their characters are no different from the odious characters of the men that they are fighting. They agree, essentially, that this is their world. Same thing that white men agree about. This is our world. We control it. We have our hands on the button of power all the time. But is it time for a revision of this notion of gender politics? Is it time for a reexamination of this? Because there are so many internal contradictions here. Again, I come back to Hillary Clinton as a leading candidate. And everything suggests to me that the reaction should be very different about this woman. And it isn't. She has been as ruthless, if not more so, than most men I know. She certainly has not been ethical in her conduct. She has had no problems at all asserting and taking advantage of her white skin female privileges in this country. I mean, she walked out of the White House and into a U.S. Senate seat. She didn't have to run for dog catcher and then cat catcher and then, you know, cattle catcher. She just waltzed into the seat. It was made for her. And they're doing the same thing with Chelsea Clinton now. They're grooming Chelsea to be the heir apparent to the Hillary and Bill Clinton mystique. And already it's working. Chelsea got out of college and walked into a six-figure job. I don't know any average college grad who just can do that. But is this the kind of woman? Why does she have such great appeal? Is it because she behaves like a man, although she's a woman. You know, you understand what I'm saying? I'm not suggesting anything other than this notion of power. Is she seen, therefore, as a woman comfortable wielding power the same way that we could see, for example, a John Kerry wielding power? Kerry, who acts like the President of the United States. We saw that in her term as Secretary of State, she acted like the President of the United States. In fact, she had Barack Obama sitting at her side as a prop for her exit tour, you know, the rock style exit tour that she took. And she says, oh, yes, he's my buddy. At no time did she ever communicate that she was actually subservient in the hierarchy to the president. So why this appeal? What, therefore, is the message that she's communicating? And I'm just using that as an example. My real example comes really out of Frederick Douglass, going back to the 1860s, or even further than that, going back to the 1840s. Frederick Douglass, who I contend was one of the greatest feminists this country had ever seen. Here is a man who was enslaved as a child, spent most of his life from childhood into adulthood in subjugation in this country, and then escaped and began a campaign to abolish slavery. And in that quest, he found common ground with white women who were campaigning for the right to vote, for universal suffrage, but not quite universal. The right for white women to vote is essentially what they stood for. But even so, Frederick Douglass said that the deprivation of their rights as citizens was something that he could identify with, and he actively campaigned against it all across the nation and even in Europe, where he gave many speeches championing the rights of women to vote, knowing full well that it would not apply to African American women. But still, he was very, very supportive of this. In fact, I'll read you what he said in the North Star. This is the paper that he published after the first Women's Rights Convention in Seneca Falls in July of 1848. He says, in respect to political rights, we hold woman to be justly entitled to all we claim for man. We go farther and express our conviction that all political rights which it is expedient for man to exercise, it is equally so for women. All that distinguishes man as intelligent and accountable being is equally true of woman. And if that government is only just which governs by the free consent of the governed, there can be no reason in the world for denying to woman the exercise of the elective franchise or hand in making and administering the laws of the land. Our doctrine is that right is of no sex. That's extraordinary. And that is political thinking. He knew, the way he wrote it, he knew that this was a struggle essentially of white women looking for the right to vote, to exercise their rights, their natural rights and privileges as citizens of the United States, but particular kinds of citizens as white women in the society. And here's Frederick Douglass, by then seen as an extraordinary influence because he was quite an orator, and with incredible reasoning, able to jump over the obvious obstacle here and the obvious exception even to these women's thinking, that they were not talking about black women, nor were they talking necessarily about black men. And even so, he says, there is merit in supporting their position. Well, the two main women of this movement, Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony, welcomed Douglass's involvement because, of course, he helped raise money for the cause. But more than that, he helped illuminate the yawning contradiction of these constitutional protections that we're supposed to apply across the board. But these same women who willingly accepted his help, when it came time to discuss the matter of slavery and the emancipation of slaves, they said, Fred, here's how this, you know, nothing personal, you understand, but we can't really support you. In other words, here was an opportunity for them to transcend that barrier of racial privilege and to act in true form as politically sophisticated people. And they absolutely denied the opportunity. They said, we can't go. We can't support you. And that has been the historic arrangement in the United States. This internal contradiction that the women's movement simply would not acknowledge as a fatal flaw. How is it that they don't understand this to be a problem? How is it that they don't recognize the limitations of their own movement? And why, therefore, are people trying so hard to convert them anyway? Do I want to work this hard to educate somebody about something that should naturally occur to them in their thinking? I come back to Sister Hillary and notions of privilege and how it works. In the United States, there is an implicit understanding. Even as white women have trouble with white men, they have no difficulty at all with the idea that they literally are in a position of control, just as white men are, of everybody else. And they still have been holding tenaciously to this idea of superiority, racial superiority, disguised under this title called feminism, that they're feminists, they are political people, they understand that anybody subjugated, it's wrong. And yet they commit it over and over and over again. I look at the people who are leading in the information industry, for example, and there is no room for, when you watch Sunday programs, and I long ago decided that I will have to severely limit my intake of the Sunday programs, because I just absolutely refuse at this day and time to support an apartheid arrangement. I'm not going to tolerate any program that presents America to me as an all-white club. I won't do it. or as probably not physically an all-white club, but intellectually an all-white club. I refuse to do that as well, because that is oppression. And it's in your face. They're not even polishing the thing up. They're not even trying to just kind of take a little edge off of it. No. Now, I was raised in the Caribbean, in Trinidad. I talk about this all the time. And the women in my little town, they took care of business. They didn't have all this yammering about power. They just simply exercised it. It took me a long time to recognize that, by the way. Why? Because these women were basically homemakers, but not quite just homemakers. They had a lot of kids. My mother had 9, and believe it or not, we were among the smaller families in my town. There was one woman who needed literally a bus to take her children anywhere. She had 23 children and was, I mean, the woman was just a machine. But all the families in my town were pretty big families. And the women's husbands tended to be in business. My mother also owned her own businesses. My father owned his own businesses as well. But they took care of business. They handled what they needed to handle, and they were powerful without making all that noise. We knew in our household, as big and as, you know, strapping guy and authoritative as my father was, all my mother had to say was, "I don't think so." And that's the end of the conversation. It didn't go any further. "I don't think so." That's it. And every day, you know, you're taking care of your children, you're taking care of house and home, you're taking care of order, you're making sure everybody is well taken care of. And that very thing is what does not matter to most women in the so-called feminist movement. They deny this as being essential to social stability. The family, in other words, is not a high priority item, and I can't understand that. In my culture, that is the revolution. The revolution is in family. You keep your family together, you raise your family right. That's a major revolution right there. And when you do that kind of work, you are producing solid citizens. That's the work. You go to the South, you go to Puerto Rico, you go in any other country, everybody understands the value of family. And that was the first concept that I found to be contradictory in the feminist movement. There was a kind of disdain for family life that way, as if it were backward, as if it were a retardant to a woman's liberation. Bizarre. So there's cultural dissonance as well, because in order for me to buy into this philosophy of feminism, I now have to go outside my cultural conditioning, and I now have to hate what really was a vital part of me, making me. My makeup is very culturally based. I don't hate men. Well, hate a couple. But generally across the board, I don't. And yet I understand exactly why there would be this discussion going on in the United States, because it is a society like all over the world. Men are in power all over the world. But I think there is a tendency to underrate the power of women. And in a cultural sense, when you understand cultures, you see how powerful women really are. You go to any of the African countries, it's the women who are running the businesses. In any little village, yes, there is a disproportionate percentage of the power arrangement there, but it is not to be seen as if these women in these cultures are powerless. We know there are so many examples of powerlessness. We know that. But to say that they are totally without power is not correct either. Or that their concept of reorganizing the power arrangement has to represent the model put forward by the United States, the women in the United States. It makes no sense to me. So I thought I would raise this question. What, therefore, is a woman in the socio-political sense? Not just to be answered by women, but by men. What do you understand a woman to be? What is her function as you understand it in life? How do you embrace that? Or do you embrace that? Are you clear about what it is? How do you relate to women in a socio-political sense? These are really important questions, I think. And the same thing, the flip side also goes, you know, men are not necessarily that they have all of the power, all of the answers either. There is that line of demarcation as well. And in the United States, it's absolutely not just race, it's also class, and it's also culture. So we have a triple whammy here in defining roles across the board. We'll come to your questions about that and your comments about that, but soon Gary will be here and we want to communicate some messages to you today. And just let me know when he's ready and we'll proceed. So we'll take a break at the half hour, and that's just 1 minute from now. So I could tell you that this is a thing that bothers me, and it bothers me because the fact that Hillary Clinton, an example of exactly what I'm talking about, that Hillary Clinton could be so popular is a terrifying thing. It talks about the failure of women to have standards. Or, put it the other way, that women have no problem playing the game the same way the men do. And that's not right, and that's not necessarily attractive. It should bother women that she is possibly a president of the United States in the making. This is terrifying. And in so many ways, goes against the grain of what we define, or women generally across the board define, as desirable traits in a woman, in today's modern woman, if you will. Is she the kind of person we want? Is she the kind of woman you admire? That's the question we will be talking about today. Okay, so let's take a break and we'll come back. Gary will be with us for a couple of minutes, and then we proceed with your questions and your thoughts and ideas right after this. Let's hear some more filler. She go on and take cigar before anybody. She go on and make you
go sit down for sure. She wants salute, man, she go sit down for sure. She wants sit down for table before anybody. She wants sit down for table before anybody. She want take piece of meat before anybody. She want take piece of meat before anybody. Call 'em for dance, she go dance, lady dance. Call 'em for dance, she go dance, lady dance. African woman go dance, she go dance the fire dance. African woman go dance, she go dance the fire dance.
That's Fela distinguishing the notions of what African women who had transformed themselves in the Western notion of what it is to be a woman. So this is his dissertation. You're listening to PRN.FM. I'm Utrice Lead. The program is Lead Stories, and Gary is joining me now in studio. Thank you, Gary.
Hi, Utrice. Let me explain what we're doing. We're doing a fundraiser for Progressive Radio Network. We're in our 10th year, and we have what we believe is the strongest lineup of progressive, meaning empowering. It's not a political statement. It's just people looking for the truth and how to empower their audience with that truth. And we have people from all different walks of life. And these are people that simply don't fit comfortably within the NPR, PBS, Pacifica format, myself included. And now we have a large and growing audience. We're number one in the world. If you Google Progressive Radio, about 110 million hits this morning, we're number one. If you Google Progressive Radio Network, which is exclusively about us, we were 23 million this morning. And if you Google the different documentaries that we produce and share with the audience for free, we had anywhere from 65 million hits up into the hundreds of millions. So our message of empowering people to make healthy and positive choices is getting out. At the end of the day, we've never had a single program have to do the traditional fundraising, and we won't, because I subsidize out of my own royalties and lectures the different programs every week, every day, 24/7, and we're adding to it. There are 9 new shows coming on board, including Ralph Nader, who'll be on board, I believe, as of next week, and Bonnie Fuller, Guns N' Roses, and other great shows that we carry here, plus Originate. But what we're doing now is, since Utrice has a daily strip, the only other daily strip except my program, which is on noon to one, Utrice has selected some premiums, and we have videos and books and that we can offer the public, to offer to raise some funds for Utrice's program, and occasionally. And we believe it will be successful enough that we can keep it an occasional few minutes. That's why we're doing what we're doing. And then we wanted to select, and Utrice selected something, and I just want to give you a little background on it. I invented this years ago, about 20 years ago. It's called Red Stuff. And the reason I invented Red Stuff was because all the national surveys showed that we were not consuming the proper amount of fruits and vegetables each day. And even the most educated Americans, try as they may, don't always get what they need in a given day based upon schedules and availability and our rushed and harried lifestyle. So I want to make it easy for people. So I went about finding the best fruits. And first I had to study for over a year the scientific literature. Which are the best fruits? There's over 100 fruits. Now, which of those fruits have the most phytonutrients, phytochemicals, polyphenols, the very chemicals, 100 to 200 per fruit, that help our cells maximize wellness to the cell and antioxidants? And there I found certain fruits were, in my opinion, in the scientific literature as I read it, was far superior than other fruits. I wanted something that had zero fat, zero trans fats, zero cholesterol, low sodium, only 8 milligrams, a good amount of dietary fiber, low sugar, and that's what I have. Only 54 calories, so it's good for diabetics, low glycemic, but it's all natural. This is all raw living food. And here's what I did. I took all these fruits, apples, cherries, strawberries, blueberries, blackberries, cranberries, raspberries, pineapples, apricots, mangoes, peaches, pears, and watermelon. Bring them in, you wash them down, you then press out the juice. Then you dry the juice through a special process at about 88 degrees. So it's room temperature, so it's a living food. So you have the best of all, enzyme-rich, living food. It's a powder. It's a big jar, 500-gram jar. It's also Circle K kosher. It's gluten-free. It's non-GMO, and it's vegan. So it meets the needs of so many people who want healthy, clean, living, vital foods. It's called Red Stuff. It's the fruits, the berries, and the pectins that is so important for us. So it's a month's supply. It's called Red Stuff. It's delicious tasting. And we put a little stevia in there. Has the natural berry flavor. It is terrific. I take it everywhere I go because when I have one scoop of the Red Stuff, I know what it does for me. In fact, in my races, the latest race was just 3 weeks ago Sunday in the National 20K Championship where I won a gold medal. Every time when others had the colas, which they had on the table for themselves, or the caffeine jolts, I had a little cup of coconut water with Red Stuff in it. Had my energy galore, and a 20K is a long race. Now, so that's what we're offering today for you, Teresa's program, the Red Stuff. Delicious, nutritious, powerful, powerful. Because just be realistic. When are you going to have 4,000 milligrams of apple or cherries, strawberries, blueberries, and all these other wonderful berries? You're lucky if you have one berry a week, and we're giving you almost 17 in a day. So that's the Red Stuff. Then, as a special thank you to Utrecht's audience, you're also going to get a wonderful DVD, brand new. In fact, it hasn't been distributed. It's for a PBS program around the United States now called Healing the Brain Naturally. Now, this is $40. The world's greatest neuroscientists are in the documentary film showing you how the brain ages, why we have memory loss, dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, insomnia, all these conditions, even depression and anxiety. But more importantly, what can we do to reverse them, to slow them down? And that's what the documentary does. Now, currently, this documentary is playing all across the United States, and it's rated on a scale of 1 to 0 to 5 in PBS land. 0 is terrible. 5 is a super blockbuster. It was rated 5+, the highest rating in the history, because people over the age of 30, they want to know about their brain. They want to know about their parents' brain. They want to know about an aunt, an uncle, friend, or themselves who start to forget things and what they can do. Now, mind you, everything that we know that's state-of-the-art, because this is brand new, so new, I haven't even offered it to my own audience yet. This is brand new, and that's what was selected as the thank you gift when you call and you get your Red Stuff. And again, all the money, every penny, is going to PRN to help with the production expenses. And we have a lot. We have a big team here. And this way it keeps it so you get just nothing but radio. Give a call now. You're going to save a lot. You're saving $74. $74. So you call 877-627-5065. Again, 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. You're getting the brand new documentary, Healing the Brain Naturally. Healing the Brain Naturally. Everybody likes that, and it's free. It's a gift when you support the station by getting the Red Stuff. And who wouldn't benefit from the Red Stuff? Everybody would benefit because it's got all the best berries in here. It's great for you. It's been around for 20 years. It's one of the two most important products I've ever invented. You won't find it out there in supermarkets, drug stores, health food stores. You won't find it in MLMs. You won't find it advertised anywhere. It's not. It's just something very private that the people with my radio audience know about it, but no one else does. I don't have any sales force out there selling it. Derived from all fresh fruits. So that's it, Utrecht. That's the apples, cherries, strawberries, blueberries, blackberries, cranberries, raspberries, pineapples, apricots, mangoes, peaches, pears, and watermelon. All together in a powdered form, delicious, nutritious, just bursting with phytonutrient power. And it's our premium for today.
And we're asking that you make a pledge of how much, Gary?
The pledge is $75.99. You're saving $74. So you're getting it below what anyone else could get it for anywhere. If you called my office, we couldn't sell it to you for that price. And that way you're getting a free gift, you're getting a special can of this, and everybody should be using red stuff in any case. So Utrice, back to your program.
Thank you, Gary.
As always, and again, support Utrice Lead, support Progressive Reader Network. No program has had to stop and break for premiums, but we need a little support, and this will certainly help because we just hired social media people to promote each of the shows, including Utrice's, to blogosphere out there. And that's why, with all that we're doing, getting our articles, our documentaries from Danny Schechter from the News Dissector, who's won 6 Emmys and an Armstrong Award, his articles, investigative reports, we're promoting him out into the universe. Michio Kaku, promoting him out in the universe. Helen Caldicott, all these wonderful people, that's what we do all day. We get their articles and videos all out into the universe, including Utrice's. So it gives you a wonderful opportunity to get something you're going to benefit from, you're going to enjoy, you're going to enjoy the taste, it's going to help you, and you're going to get a free documentary on healing the brain naturally in the process. Again, call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. Back to you.
Thanks, Gary. Thank you. And just a word to you listeners, as you call in with your questions and your comments, 888-874-4888. I'm asking that you do support this program and PRN. It's really very, very important. We're not going to be doing hours and hours of pledges and so forth, but we do want to say that it is important to support the station at this time. It's very important. It keeps everybody on the air and keeps us in touch with each other. So 877-627-5065. And please remember to say, Utrice, okay? I want this program to be on the top. I'm competitive that way. I believe that we have a great audience that would really support the program because we are connecting in that way. All right. 888-874-4888 to discuss what we talked about earlier. And 877-627-5065 is a number to call to make your contribution to keeping PRN and this program going. It's a really wonderful way of saying, I support you in what you do. It means a lot to me to know that people are supporting the program because the program supports their informational needs. All right, do we have anybody on the air just yet? Anybody calling in? I'll see you as soon as you call in. But I wanted to talk about this today because I thought about it all weekend, and I was stunned. I continue to be stunned, and yet I understand why Hillary Clinton would have such an extraordinary appeal. Of course, a lot of it is the media, manufacturing the consent, as it were. About this person, this woman, as being practically the savior of the entire country at this point. I disagree, and I worry that people, what is the decision about? How do we discuss this business about what a woman ought to be? What is the information that you have? Who shapes your thoughts? What is important to you as a woman or as a man dealing with women, whether you have daughters or whether you have a wife or girlfriend or whatever? What is the relationship? How do you interpret that relationship or that power equation in a socio-political environment which we operate in every single day? How do you see, or are you comfortable with where you are with that definition of womanhood? It is a very interesting question, don't you think? It really is. So it's important for this discussion to happen at this time, I think, because as we get into politics, local and national politics, and we look at it's the system comes first. And I can't really say that I see women as women with all the all the legendary attributes that women are supposed to be to have, I don't see that it has changed the system very much. The system still is quite predatory. It still is racist. It still is sexist. It still is, you know, imperialist. I mean, Hillary herself said she wouldn't hesitate to use nuclear weapons on Iran. I played the tape for you. But does a woman make a difference just because she's a woman, or is it about the level of evolution, political evolution in her mind? What is going on in a person who says, well, I'm a modern woman and I can lead now? But isn't that really a restating of the fact that I will lead, but by the rules I got from men? My thinking is not different from that of men. My actions, therefore, are not so very different from those of men. We had Nancy Pelosi talking about, well, why is it important that anybody should know what Obamacare is? Vote for it first. This does not make any... Her contribution hasn't enlightened policymaking at all. And we see this repeatedly. In every sphere of endeavor, the women who profess that the presence of more and more women in any field of endeavor necessarily will change things. And yet we see that it doesn't exactly change things, because the thinking remains the same and the fidelity is to the system and maintaining it intact. Don't cause any changes, because personally now your interests are much higher than the aggregate interests of the public. Do you agree? What do you think? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. 888-874-4888. Let me know what you're thinking on that score. Especially, I'd like to hear from people who were raised with a lot of women in the house. And now with the distance of time, when you look back at it, what messages did you get about women that now shape your current actions? What is it that you have been told, or what is it that you have learned that has made you different in the way that you approach life and interaction and exercising your own power, whether in the household or at your job or just in your interactions with people? Have you seen examples in which the presence of women had made a definitive difference, the involvement of women had made a definitive difference, and the exact opposite, where the presence of women in the scene, in the scenario, made very little, if any, difference? And what do you attribute these things to? That's the question. Okay, I'm waiting to hear from you. Okay, I'm not hearing from you. All right, so we'll proceed. We'll proceed with this. This discussion today is a bit troubling for me, I must tell you, because I get all the time that people are wondering, just what is it that you're thinking? Well, I think a lot. I spend a lot of time thinking, and I'm very, very concerned about how do we break the cycle of primitive thinking? That's just thinking knee-jerk reaction without being analytical about things. What is the consequence of something like that? If we are to grow as a society and particularly for those groups, such as the group to which I belong, which is an oppressed group. What, therefore, must the difference be in our orientation? And do we understand the need to constantly question this? Laura from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon, Eutrice.
Good afternoon.
I can't really answer to the latest points you were bringing up, but I can say, like, you triggered something in me when you were talking about, you know, what the definition is of women and feminism, and I was just thinking about the fact that basically, you know, it really comes down to less about sex and more about our culturally accepted definition of power. And it just seems to me that in political circles or even in business, that I've noticed that, you know, basically the acceptance is if you accept, as you were stating, these rules, these fundamental values and this definition of power, then you can be accepted, you know, into the fold, so to speak. So basically, you know, a man in a skirt for the most part. And, you know, I find that completely unacceptable. And basically, you know, if you still, as I'm thinking a lot of Hillary's behavior, which is very warlike and aggressive and don't question me and this is how it is. And this is what's necessary for me to be a woman of power whom, you know, I can't speak for her, but I mean that men might admire and even vote for. So we really haven't gotten very far if the only way to wield power is to appear more, well, mm-hmm. I'm going out on a limb, but man-like,
mm-hmm.
Rather than the aspects of power that I think women have very inherently. And part of that, rather than a weakness, but a tremendous power, is to be able to nurture and cultivate identity, strength, and power in offspring, and also bring that to the community as a whole.
That's a great, very profound thought. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. From Baltimore, Green, you're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice. How are you?
Hello. Fine, thank you.
Good. Is your throat any better?
Getting there.
I wish you a speedy recovery.
Thank you so much.
Eutrice, you know, I really think that it's natural for black men not to be sexist. And understanding the way things are now, and how there's so much sexism within the black community on the side of men, I think it's something that we learn from the society we're in. But it's been my experience that in the home, the woman was always the most powerful, and I saw that in, you know, the house that I was raised in my grandparents' houses, and I saw that to be the case in the households of most of my friends when I was young. But, you know, we live in a society that's very, and I mentioned it once before, the key theme seems to be individualism and men having more horsepower. Not that we're stronger in every way, because we're not. Even physically, I've seen women do things that men can't do. Because I've seen women hold a baby in one arm and, you know, an iron in the other and do other things. And, you know, I see men try to do the same thing, and that baby is awfully heavy. But we usually have more horsepower, so we tend to take advantage of that and exert our will over women. But I don't believe that black, you know, African men are naturally that way, because we recognize the authority of queens long before people did in other societies.
I can't disagree with you more. I think, in fact, this is a huge issue within the African-American community, notions of power, especially because the men are carrying a special burden in this society, and men feel it. It's a palpable feeling. And they carry this burden of being less than, and therefore this spills over into their intimate lives, you know, the family structure, the children, the partners in their lives absorb the shock of these unresolved feelings. When a person moves around during the course of the day, and many times during the day, it registers on you how you have to fight to get even small things done. These are the manifestations of oppression. So who do you vent to? Who do you vent on? Naturally, the people who are closest to you. And there are alarming statistics about domestic violence, about children not connecting with their parents correctly in a very healthy way, because the parents are dealing with pressures that have not been resolved. It's a huge issue for me. I see that all the time. I think this is a discussion that needs to go on in the community. It really does. But I appreciate your thoughts
May I offer what a woman is to me?
Sure, quickly, because we're closing up.
Okay.
And we're continuing this discussion tomorrow, by the way.
Okay, well, I'll call back tomorrow.
Okay, thank you.
Anyway, you have a good day, yeah?
You too, Green. Thank you so much for your call. We will continue this discussion because it actually applies to our politics, and we'll see that more and more in this political season as people present themselves for election. And we have to consider, what basis are you operating, and do we agree with it? All right, please keep calling and get your pledges in if you can to support this program. 877-627-5065. That's a wonderful thing that you can do to support PRN. We'll see each other tomorrow. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Wake Up Call with Richard Martin.
She know him, man, a master. She go cook for him. She go do anything he say.